Right now, this is like a special late night edition.
It is. We're recording after 8 p.m. late night.
This is probably where you hit your groove and I'm about to go to bed.
I poured myself a glass of wine. Anything goes late night.
At 8:20.
You never know where the night's going to take you.
All right, and here we are, episode 28 of this year. So we are 28 weeks into this year because we haven't missed a week.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Well, the public can't get enough, Chrissy.
It's true. We're coming on strong. Coming on strong.
Yeah, we don't want to disappoint. We don't want to skip a week.
Yes. Oh, and this is That's Outrageous.
It is. You know what's even sadder? I was thinking too. We're 28. I don't know what that math is. We've done many episodes and we still don't have a concise sentence to sum up the podcast.
This is going to sound even worse. I think one week you totally nailed it. I'm not even kidding, but I have forgotten what that was.
Yeah. It does like,
sound bad. One week we were both like, oh, that was good.
And one thought to write it down or change that. Is like the Instagram caption, nothing.
No, but luckily we can just go back and listen to it.
Yeah, but I don't know what episode that was.
And it might be time to mention that we are going to have a big 1 year anniversary that we're calling the Muldoon Awards.
That's right. It is going to be a treasure trove of special guests and awards and just a celebration of all things. That's Outrageous. And of course, Patrick Muldoon.
Of course.
If you're saying, hey, is one of those special guests Patrick Muldoon? No, I don't believe it is. We have not.
Well, we never know. We can't rule it out.
I know.
We can't rule it out.
I feel like he'd do it.
Yeah, I think we got to DM him.
But if we get him, we're going to have to do like a 3-part episode. Like he can't even do the Muldoon Awards. He needs dedicated time. You know, uninterrupted. It could be a 3-parter.
Oh, yeah. Well,
easily.
Now that I've seen a lot of his movies, I would say he does need a lot of time. Mm-hmm. He definitely does. There's a rich library to dig into.
There is. You don't think there is, everybody, but there is, as we've proven.
But we are going to dig into that on the Muldoon Awards. It won't be all Patrick Muldoon, but I have been doing a lot of looking back at past episodes, Sam, and I'll tell you, there's been some delightful stories on this podcast.
There have. And sometimes in my real life, I think of them in my mind and I refer to them. I'll go, that's like when we did that story about, you know.
Yeah. I was just referencing those crazy mice in Australia, their infestation.
Oh, that's terrible. Are they like getting that under control at all? I don't know.
No, actually, I did see an update recently. They're not. It's really bad.
Oh, no.
It's really bad. But all right, Anne, let's get to this week's news.
Let's do it.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. So you know how the real estate market is white hot right now.
It's booming, everyone says.
Booming, yes.
Is it a seller's market? Yeah, it's a seller's market right now, right? Yeah.
It's a seller's market, yeah. Which is why I will wait this out and then sell my house at below market value.
Right. Right. And they're like, no, it's way too much.
I guarantee that'll happen.
Yeah.
Well, and let me say, Canada, no exception to this.
I feel like a lot of people want to move to Canada just with like everything that's happened in the US and the healthcare nightmare that we live in. I feel like Canada is a good option for a lot of people.
Well, this could be your chance, Anne, because in Ontario, there is a 19-acre lot off of Lake Erie.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, it's for sale. The asking price, now get this, Anne, 19 acres is just over $80,000.
What's wrong with it? Is it haunted?
Aha, there is a catch. The lot is completely underwater.
I mean...
But the listing says this property is presently underwater, but could have endless possibilities in the future.
What kind of, I thought everything will be underwater soon. Wouldn't it be more underwater? In what scenario is this body of land coming to surface?
Listen, that's where you got to get creative,
Anna. I got to get some scientists on this and be like, what are my chances that this is actually going to like pop back up for me to use?
Yeah. Or maybe, how about this, Anne? Maybe you just start a houseboat colony.
You could probably do something cool where you like people like scuba dived and you do some sort of, that seems like a lot of work. But you could be like underwater adventure, you know, and make it be like a tourist trap.
Own a home on Lake Erie, literally on Lake Erie.
Yeah.
You never know, Anne. You never know. Creativity. That's
true. I mean, you know, they're sending idiots to space all the time.
It's like a real life water world. Maybe people will grow gills.
I'm telling you, I think Kevin Costner was on to things because he really predicted a lot of things.
like what?
Well, water world for one.
Okay.
He did that other movie where he was there was like no more post office. He was like the last postman, wasn't it? I think it was called The Postman.
I think it was called The Postman. I never saw that movie.
I don't think I ever did either, but I feel like Costner's on just the pulse.
You know how I love the post office. It makes me very sad what's going on.
It's awful. I'm saying, I think Costner, maybe, you know.
He's some kind of seer.
Maybe.
All right, Anne. Well, here's some more good news for you.
Okay.
Philadelphia's naked bike ride was canceled because of COVID last year. But this August, it's back on.
Naked. That means penis is and balls are right on those. That doesn't sound, I mean, riding a bike hurts your ass anyway.
Yeah.
Naked must be excruciating.
I can't imagine. Well, yes.
How long of a bike ride is this?
You know, I don't know. But I will say that the only requirement is that you need to wear a mask.
Wow. No, I just feel like the chafing, I feel like the sweating, it's just for your genitals doesn't seem safe.
No, it doesn't. Nothing about it seems appealing.
Everything else is probably fine from the waist up, but just everybody, no, anybody who rides a bike, I can't even do spin classes without my butt hurting.
Oh God, no. Yeah, no, I don't enjoy it at all. But they say, oddly enough, in the past, people would wear masks pre-pandemic because they didn't want people to see their identity.
That's dumb.
Oh, Anne.
And you're whizzing past somebody too. It's not like, I mean, if you're going to be willing to go on a naked bike ride, go on a naked bike ride.
No mask, you're saying.
No mask.
Yeah.
If you're going to let someone see your balls, they can see your face.
It's not just men, Anne. Women can go in the race.
I know. I'm just really fixated on like balls sticking to the chair, the seat.
Yeah.
Why? I just don't understand why you would want to do it. It just seems physically painful.
I agree. Believe me, you will not. There's two things that I don't go for: nudity and bike riding.
I know that. When is this race?
In August in Philadelphia. Oh, I like Philadelphia. God.
The humidity level in August, as someone who grew up very close to Philadelphia, the level of humidity in August, it just sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
But I almost want to go see it.
You know, it'd be a terrible job to be a medic at that race. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to look at a lot of inner thigh chafing, I feel like.
Yeah. A lot of things. A lot. Yeah. All right, Anne, I think you'll like this one. So there was this couple, Victoria and Alexander, and their relationship was on the fritz.
Hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
So they, in an effort to restore their loving feelings for each other, they decided to handcuff themselves together.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
To accompany each other everywhere. And they wanted to stay handcuffed until they got married.
Wait a minute. They're already on the fritz and they're not even married yet.
Right. And this was how they wanted to try to rekindle their relationship.
It's called breaking up.
Well, how long would, here's a question. How long would you last handcuffed handcuffed to your husband?
20 minutes. I mean, that sounds terrible. Handcuffed?
20 minutes is actually a pretty long time.
Yeah, I would be done. If I, let's say I just had to like go into the kitchen and I wanted to make a cup of coffee by then, I'd be like, you need to not be here. So however much time, that, even sleeping, like I don't even like anybody touching me when I'm sleeping. No.
Well, they really gave it a go and they lasted 123 days.
Oh my God.
That's like 4 months.
That's 4 months. And then in handcuff lifetime, that's like 10 years.
Yeah. Well, guess what happened?
They got married handcuffed.
No, they broke up.
They did?
Yes.
Before or after they stopped handcuffed? Did they at 123, were they like, we're taking off the cuffs and also you're moving out?
Yes. They said, as soon as the handcuffs were cut off, Victoria yelled hooray and the two immediately broke up.
I think people who are in the best relationship in the world getting handcuffed would break up. I can't imagine your things are on the fritz and then you think this would somehow be a solution.
Yeah, that's what they did. It didn't work out.
But that's a long time.
Yeah, that's 4 months. That's a
really long time.
Every second of every day.
What is like one in the shower when they're, or did they shower together? How does that work?
I don't know. Plus also it really has to irritate your wrist. Not for nothing.
Yes. Yes. Oh God. That sounds terrible.
Yeah. Well, they broke up. All right, Anne. And our last story, an Ohio State Highway Patrol trooper successfully performed the Heimlich maneuver after a man allegedly attempted to swallow a bag of cannabis when he was pulled over for speeding.
He swallowed it in the bag?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a good idea.
No. So this guy was speeding. He was doing 94 miles an hour. A cop pulled him over and the guy panicked, swallowed this bag of weed, but then was choking.
I was going to say that, I mean, swallowing a baggie is, I mean, that has to be tough, even with a thing, a big glass of water.
Yeah. Well, and so had the police come up to the window, when he came up to the window, the guy was choking.
Uh-oh.
He had to pull him out of the car and perform the Heimlich.
Uh-oh.
And he spit out the bag. And then the officer said to him, did you want to die over a minor misdemeanor?
Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, marijuana, that doesn't seem like you'd get in this day and age that much trouble. I mean, if it was like a very heavy narcotic, then maybe
that would be a problem. Yeah. So someone's not thinking clearly.
Well, he's probably high.
Yeah, I guess. And driving at excessive speeds.
See, then he wasn't high, because no one high on marijuana is speeding while driving. You're going 20 thinking you're speeding.
Yeah, that's true. And he was going 94.
He was on something else.
I'm going to guess that people who went to high school with this guy were like, oh yeah, I could totally see that happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he's the brightest.
He get arrested for possession?
He did get, he got a citation for speeding, failing to wear a seatbelt.
Oh, he didn't even have the seatbelt on.
Yes. And he received a summons for marijuana.
Oh, well, if you're carrying illegal drugs on you, go the speed limit. How about that?
Yeah. That seems like a good, that just seems like step one.
Yeah. Try to not draw attention to yourself. put on a shirt and go 65.
That's right. All right, Anne. Well, this week we watched the 1996 film Kingpin.
Yes, Chrissy's choice, because my last few choices have made her very upset.
Oh, well.
So I said, you know what? You pick one.
I think very upset is a bit of an exaggeration, because if I've learned anything doing this podcast, it's I have a high tolerance for movies with flimsy plots and.
Oh no, you were. I believe the term you used was disturbed by Clifford.
I was disturbed by Clifford. Yeah. That's true.
I mean, disturbed was quite an adjective.
Yeah, I actually yes, it is something when you're more disturbed by Clifford than Fatal Acquittal. Let's just say that.
Okay, fair.
But I had never seen this film, Anne, and I was looking up, you know,
but you've never seen it before. I remember seeing it. Oh, so now, because when I was watching it and I saw it when it came out, like whenever 96, I don't remember if I saw it in the movies or if I saw it. I think I might've seen it in the movies. I was like, I'm fascinated that Christy chose this movie for many reasons.
Yes, well, I'll tell you what happened was I was trying to think of a movie and I was looking up stuff that, you know, is considered underrated by the World Wide Web.
Is that considered underrated, Kingpin?
I found it on a list and I was like, oh, I've never seen that movie. And that's what this podcast is all about, Anne, the outrageously underrated or overrated or whatever. But this was underrated.
I don't remember it being underrated.
Well, it's funny you say that because this film was directed by the Farrelly brothers.
Right.
And one of them, Peter, was Peter Farrelly called the film's box office failure the biggest disappointment of his career. And he attributed to the failure to the release during the 1996 Olympics.
Oh.
But now this is why you probably don't recall it as a failure, Anne. He said 6 to 8 months later, when the film was released on home video, it became a big hit.
So that's what it is. Okay. Yeah. Because when I think back on Kingpin, I think that it was, you know, pretty well received and people saw it, you know, a lot of people saw it.
Yeah. Well, it does. It has a good cast. It has Woody Harrelson plays the main character. Yeah, Roy
and Munch. I love Woody Harrelson.
I do too. Oddly enough, the original choice for this film was Jim Carrey, but I guess they could not get Jim Carrey.
Well, Jim Carrey did do that Farrelly Brothers movie with Renee Zellweger.
Well, he was in Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. Oh yeah, of course. But then he also did that. I think it might've been after Kingpin, but it was like Renee Zellweger was the love interest in that one.
Yeah. That's when they started dating. I can't think of
what. Yeah. I forget what happened in that one. I want to say he might've been like schizophrenic and I think they might've gotten some blowback on that, but he definitely has starred in more than one movie for them. Dumb and Dumber is funny.
Yeah. Well, I think that was the thing. They had done Dumb and Dumber with him. They wanted him for this movie. They did not get him. And so Woody Harrelson.
I thought he was well cast, Woody Harrelson. I thought he was really, he's the best.
Oh yeah, no, he was good. He was definitely good. Dumb and Dumber came out in 1994, so that was 2 years before this.
That's it. Wow, they were really, really. They had a big, long, hot stretch, like in the late '90s. These Farrelly brothers, because it was like Something About Mary. Like, I felt like there was one every year.
Yeah, it was Me, Myself, and Irene.
That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, it definitely has a good cast. The other co-star is Randy Quaid. He plays Ishmael, who is an Amish man.
Yeah.
Bill Murray is in it as Woody Harrelson's rival, Ernie McCracken.
Yeah. And he's obviously hilarious.
He is.
Hilarious. As is Randy Quaid. Randy Quaid is downright endearing, I think, in this movie.
Well, okay, we'll get into that in a second. And then the love interest is played by Vanessa Angel. Her name is Claudia in the film. Chris Elliott has a small part as a gambler.
Yep.
And then this woman, Lynn Shea, who's another Farrelly Brothers regular.
And can I tell you, in my household, we love Lynn Shea because she is the star of the Insidious movie franchise.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oh, well, we love Insidious 1 and 2 are legit scary and really good. We've seen all of them. We celebrate the entire universe, Insidious, Conjuring universe. But Lynn Shea is like the star, one of the main stars of those movies, which are scary movies, but she's fantastic.
Well, another little bit of trivia. She is the sister of, I believe his name is Robert Shea, who was a big movie producer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. And he got them to cast. He got the Farrelly brothers to cast his sister in Dumb and Dumber in a small part.
And she's also in Something About Mary.
Well, right. So then they were like, we want you to have her read for a part in this movie. And they really didn't want to do it. And she came in costume, and they actually, when she came to the audition, thought she was a legitimately like a homeless person.
Oh.
And they started like escorting her out. And then they realized it was her. And then they were like, of course, they gave her the part. And then she was in every movie they did since then.
Yeah, she's great. And she was in, I want to say Nightmare on Elm Street too.
She's still doing stuff.
She's been around. Well, I'm telling you, she's the star of the Insidious movies.
Yeah. Well, she's now in her 70s.
We love her. We're big fans.
Yeah. So she plays the landlady to Woody Harrelson.
Yes.
All right. So basically, for those of you who maybe have not seen it like me, the basic storyline is, and this is sort of funny too, this movie is about bowling. And yeah. It preceded The Big Lebowski. And it's kind of weird that there were two movies that came out about bowling, almost like.
People love bowling. People love it. I was, again, the fact that you haven't seen this makes a lot of sense to me because in general, like these fairly, like they're gross out movies. Like there's a lot of like pretty gross. And I'm not a gross out movie person, really. Like I'm not super into like people throwing up and like yellow teeth and. You know,
yes, this definitely caters to a young male sophomoric humor type person,
which I usually do like, but I don't want to see like the vomit or the gross teeth or the like, you know, the other like the at one point he like drinks an entire bucket of bull semen.
Yeah,
actually that didn't even gross me out as much as other things, but like just the vomit, things like
that. There's a lot of vomit.
Hard pass on vomit for me.
Yeah. So Woody Harrelson plays Roy Munson, who was raised to be the best bowler in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But a fellow bowler, Ernie McCracken, and a misunderstanding with some rough punks leaves poor Roy with the loss of his bowling hand.
That was upsetting.
Yeah, that seemed like an extreme punishment for what they basically like sort of conned them out of like $1,000. And yeah. As retribution, they basically caused such irreparable harm to his hand that it had to be amputated.
They mangled his hand in the ball return.
Yes.
Look, you know, you can't hustle hustlers.
Yes. And the whole thing was that Bill Murray sort of threw him to the wolves in that scene because he drives off without him. And that's how he gets caught and his hand gets mangled.
Bill Murray kind of sets the whole thing up and is a real, you know, villain.
Yeah. So Bill Murray goes on to fame and fortune in the bowling circuit, and poor Woody Harrelson becomes, you know, very down on his luck. He can't bowl anymore. And he becomes a salesman. And like I said, he lives in this sort of like sad apartment complex, and Lynn Shay plays his landlady who asks for sexual favors instead of rent. It's that type of scene.
I'm going to say Lynn Shay doing the scenes where she's doing the, what's the proper term? Cunnilingus motioning is more disturbing to me than anything in any of the Insidious movies.
Yeah, it goes on and on too.
It's funny, but I'm like, you're grossing me out, Lynn.
Yeah, I guess it's gross. I would concur.
But she goes for it.
Oh, she certainly does. Yeah.
But yeah.
So one day, Woody Harrelson meets Randy Quaid, who is an Amish man named Ishmael.
Mm-hmm.
And he sneaks him out of the farm to go bowling because he thinks that this kid is a very good bowler.
Which is very funny that Randy Quaid's supposed to be like this young man because he's... looks at least 45.
Well, yeah, and he was supposed to be younger than Woody Harrelson, and in real life at that point, at all points I should say, he was 11 years older than
Woody. how old is he when they made that, because he looks late 40s?
So in 96, oh, pretty close, and yeah, he was 46.
That's funny.
He was 46, and I guess Woody Harrelson was like 35,
and he's like drinking milk, and he's just this very sweet, sheltered, honest, kind guy.
Yeah. And I have to say, one of the things that I thought was funny actually was that Woody Harrelson somehow finds out what like his bowling score is, and that's why he thinks he's so good. But then as he like starts working with him, he finds out that he always bowls 15 frames instead of 10.
Oh, I thought you said 50.
No, I think it was 15. Yeah, 15.
Oh, yeah, he's like, that makes sense, because he's like, Amish always do double the length of time and make it harder or something. But he still was a pretty good bowler.
Well, he does. Yeah, he does. He does do pretty well. So he convinces Ishmael to let him be his trainer, and he'll make him the best bowler the world has ever seen.
Right.
And of course, because he's Amish, all these things happen that go against his religion. You know, he starts drinking alcohol. He's cavorting with women, though nothing really happens with them. But, you know.
You know what's funny is when he's smoking and he's just like full smoking. And Woody Harrelson's like, do you want some coffee? And he's like, no, I can't have any stimulants. And he's like, what do you think you're doing now?
Yeah, right. So basically, the whole thing kind of comes to, oh, and this woman, again, played by Vanessa Angel, her name is Claudia. They come across her in this sort of grift that they're trying to pull. And she winds up joining them. The three of them start going around the country trying to make money by conning people into bowling games.
Yeah. Harrelson does what Bill Murray was doing to him, which is, you know, to try to hustle people in bowling, which apparently is something that happens in this universe.
Yeah. Yeah. So the whole thing culminates in Reno, Nevada. Reno,
Nevada. Oh, you know what? My favorite line in the whole movie is in the beginning when Bill Murray's sitting with Woody Harrelson, he's, you know, they're trying to like grift some money. And he says to the guy, the bartender, he's like, we're not interested. Let's just sit here, have 6 or 7 drinks, and then we're going to go. That doesn't sound funny, but with Bill Murray's delivery, it was funny. Because he is just the best. I mean, who doesn't like Bill Murray? You'd have to be fucking crazy not to like Bill Murray.
Well, yeah. And I did read that Bill Murray did not, he didn't recite any of the lines that were written. He basically read each scene. He knew what the point was. And then he would just do his own thing.
Yeah. It's very Bill Murray. Like he says to, like, Woody Harrelson's like eating some, I don't know what he was eating. It looked like he was eating cheese or something from a spoon, something really gross, and it was making me gag. And then Bill Murray's like, why don't you just take that and eat that outside or something. It's very, you know, I love Bill Murray.
Yes. Yes. Well, he, to me, he was the best part of the movie, and he wasn't in it. Like you always say, not enough Muldoon. I say not enough Murray.
Not enough Murray. And you're exactly right. You can tell they were like, you know, final scene is Murray versus Harrelson. And you can tell they just said to Bill Murray, just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want. You're going to go up and bowl this frame and like say and do whatever you want to do.
Oh yeah. Cause he's prancing around and he's playing to the crowd and his hairpiece is flopping.
The performances are what make this movie for sure. Cause there's a lot of heart. Like you really do root for Woody Harrelson cause he's really been through it.
Yes, he has been through it at the hands of Ernie McCracken.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it all culminates in this big bowling tournament in Reno, which the prize money is $1 million, which would, of course, mean a lot to them because they are all down on their luck. Yeah. And they all need money.
Oh, and the Amish need $500,000 to keep their farm.
That's right.
They're going to lose their farm, and that's part of why Randy Quaid decides to go with Harrelson. He wants to, like, help save his family's livelihood.
Yes, even though, yeah, even though he's breaking all the rules of his lifestyle.
Sometimes you have to do that, Chrissy.
Don't I know it, Anne? God, things I've done. Yeah, so they have this $1 million prize. It's going to be Randy Quaid versus Bill Murray. However, Randy Quaid gets into trouble with some bad guys, and yet again.
Some toughs, some bowling ball toughs.
And they injure him so that he cannot play.
Yeah, they hurt his hand. They don't mangle it, thankfully, like they did with Harrelson's, but
yeah,
he's out of commission.
So now who's going to go up against McCracken? Of course, it's going to be Woody Harrelson, who now has to bowl with his hook hand and his, you know, actual human hand. And it's this big thing, and it goes down to the very last frame. And honestly, it makes you think, like all movies, that Woody Harrelson is going to...
He might eke it out.
Pull it out as the underdog. But no, he loses. And that seems like a very sad end to this movie.
Yeah, you do feel bad for him because you're like, you know, you want to see the villain, you know, get their comeuppance.
Yes. Oh, and right near the end, when he's sort of at this pivotal point, Randy Quaid's Amish brother comes and tells him that he has to come back home. They've been looking for him. They finally found him.
He found them. He found him literally in the arena.
Yeah, in the crowd. And when Woody Harrelson is not looking, Randy Quaid leaves. So when he turns around, there his friend is now gone.
Yeah.
And also at this point, he's lost his love interest, Vanessa Angel, because she kind of gets kidnapped. She sort of gets kidnapped again by her original boyfriend who she was trying to escape.
Yeah, because she, I guess, was in the underground bowling world. And so she was involved, you know, had intimacy with all of the players, including McCracken.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so you think, oh, this is a terrible ending to this movie. And then you sort of fast forward and they're all back together on the Amish farm. Woody Harrelson, Vanessa Angel, they go to see Randy Quaid, Ishmael, and his family. And they bring great news because Woody Harrelson has gotten an endorsement deal for $500,000. And he decides to give that to the Amish family to save their farm.
So sweet. Because Harrelson's a good guy through the whole movie.
He was a good guy. He just had a lot of bad things happen to him.
He had some tough breaks. You know, I love the dad, his dad in the beginning. His dad is so sweet.
Yes, and that's the other thing. He was sort of the hero, the hometown hero, and then he returns like 20 years later. His father has passed away. His father's garage has fallen into disrepair. The place, like the ice cream place where he used to hang out, is all broken down. So it's just like the whole thing is very sad.
Yeah, it is sad.
But I will say, even though it sounds like I like this movie, of course I did not like it.
Yeah, I mean, watching some of the scenes, I was like, Chrissy picked this one? Chrissy? I'm like, semen jokes?
Yeah, I wasn't really expecting to like a Farrelly Brothers movie. I liked Something About Mary enough.
Yeah, Something About Mary's good. Dumb and Dumber's hilarious.
I can't watch Dumb and Dumber.
You don't think that's funny?
No.
Oh, I do.
I can't take that. Actually, I did see Me, Myself, and Irene, and I can't remember. I guess I didn't hate it.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
I'm almost positive I did, but yeah, I'm not their demo. Let's just say that. So I can't say that I liked the film. And I also, you know, this is from 96. There's also a lot of stuff in this film that maybe in 96, I might have found marginally funny, but like now it just doesn't seem funny at all. Like they have this ridiculous, I mean, it's meant to be ridiculous, but they have this ridiculous scene where Woody Harrelson gets into a fist fight with Vanessa Angel.
Oh yeah.
And at one point he's just like punching her boobs and it's just like,
that was weird. The boobs were moving. Like, yes. It was kind of, that was weird.
I was like, this is just in such poor taste, which I know it was supposed to be in poor taste.
Poor but taste. Like, that's what bothered you. That's the part you thought was in poor taste. The boobs moving. Okay.
Well, it's just like, there's just so much wrong with this. There's like so much wrong with this. I can't even.
I mean, that's their brand. They do gross out humor.
Yes. But I'm just saying, I don't know that in 2021, which is probably why they've given up those movies and are now doing, what was that? The Green Book or something like.
Green Book. Agree.
I don't think that their humor, they'd have to change it a bit. I don't know that it would fly.
I think it would still fly.
I think some of it, not all of it.
I don't know. But yeah, I think a lot of it is just the people that they cast. Whoever does their casting does a good job because they hire very endearing people, you know? Like Something About Mary, it's like Ben Stiller is, you root for him, and Matt Dillon's so funny in it, and Cameron Diaz is great. And, you know, Dumb and Dumber, like Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels are so cute. Like you root for these people.
Yeah. And actually, now that you're saying that, a lot of the characters are sort of similar to Something About Mary, because there's the hot woman, the underdog guy, and then like the kind of the alpha male. It's all sort of the same kind of script, really. And this movie, I mean, I guess one of the sort of semi-fun things about this movie is they did have a couple of cameos of people, particularly from the sports world. They had
I didn't even notice that. I mean, I assumed the ESPN people were like real ESPN people at that time.
Oh, well, they had the character who was in one scene known as Skidmark. That was the Boston Red Sox former pitcher, Roger Clemens.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that. I don't know that stuff.
Yeah. And then they had two, I would not have noticed this, but I read this. They had two pro bowling Hall of Famers were in the final tournament scene that both got beat by Bill Murray and Woody Harrelson.
Did you see, somebody posted it the other day on social media, not the other day, it was probably like a month ago. There was a real bowling tournament, and the guy who was the winner was like this mate. He was like talking to himself and he's like, yeah, you want this? Like doing like really like hyping up the crowd. And it was very funny.
It said bowling is an underserved sport.
Yeah, it was like the guy was just, you know, real excited about bowling.
Yeah, well, you got to listen. That's how you become get endorsement deals.
He like did the strike and was like, yeah, you know, it's a whole thing. It's very funny.
And of course, Anne, you must have noticed Blues Traveler at the end.
A popper. Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, you had to have known that was him.
Yes.
Yes. John Popper was the announcer.
That song is terrible. Blues Traveler is terrible.
I like Blues Traveler.
You like the music of Blues Traveler?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, brother, says Anne.
Blues Traveler is real bad.
Listen, this from the... You keep...
It just is. It's bad music.
This from the woman who claims that Blown Away was fine cinema.
I love Blown Away.
See? And I love Blues Traveler. I'm going to guess.
You do? That. You love Blues Traveler?
I mean, they haven't made a song in forever, but at the time I liked them. I used to say that I wanted them to play at our wedding.
Oh, God!
All right, Anne. So on our typical Muldoon, Muldon't scale.
Hmm.
Where are you landing with
that? Where am I? Well, I mean, it is funny, but it isn't something that I would like. I'm trying to think, like, a lot of times I'll say to myself, would I, if I passed it on TV, would I stop and watch? You know, would I go, oh, let me watch a couple of minutes of this. I love it. Like I do with, say, The Wedding Singer or any of the other Adam Sandler movies. So I'm going to give it a Muldoon because I did have some laughs. Mm. I do like the whole cast. I love Bill Murray. I love Woody Harrelson. Randy Quaid's funny in it. Vanessa Angel's good. And then like Chris Elliott. No, he's great. And Lin Shaye, obviously, that we love. So I'm going to give it a Muldoon.
You're going Muldoon.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I know this isn't going to shock you. I'm going to go Muldoon't.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I just can't. I liked the cast.
Well, I would love, I was like, I can't wait to hear Chrissy's opinion on this because it just seemed a little bit working too blue for you.
It's not even that, although it is that, but it's just like, I just, you know me, Anne, I can't get into, my kind of humor is like the mistaken circumstances, right. Mixed like up things.
Scenario.
I love a Three's Company. This is like frat boy dumb humor that I just never have gotten into.
Yes. Yeah.
Not all. Listen, I like Animal House, which you might, you know.
I don't like it. And you know, I don't like Animal House.
I liked Animal House. And that was literally frat boy humor. But This was not my cup of tea.
But it did have some funny moments.
It had a couple. Yes, it had a few.
I loved that. And Bill Murray's so funny.
And I love Bill Murray. Anytime Bill Murray was on, I was very happy. If Bill Murray could have been in like 50% more of this film, I probably would have liked it.
Yeah.
You know what I was thinking? I was like, afterwards, I was like, all right, well, what movie did I like that I think was perhaps underrated in hindsight?
Yeah.
Here's one for you, Anne.
Okay.
Nicolas Cage, Family Man.
I love that movie.
I don't think that got like a lot of attention.
It didn't. It didn't get a lot of attention. They do run it a lot now during the holidays because I think, you know, because it's set in the holidays. But I love that movie. I mean, you know how I feel about Nicolas Cage. He's my favorite.
Yeah.
Because even if the movie itself isn't great, he always makes it interesting. He does something interesting with every part he gets. And I think, I know people make fun of him now and they think he's ridiculous, but I think he's a genius. And I think everything he does is thought out and interesting, and there's a reason behind it. And if you read any interview with him, he's like one of the smartest people ever. And he's so well-read and he's just the fucking best, man. Nicolas Cage.
Yes. And this was a good script, other than some of his other movies that have come out since then.
Well, have to watch. I've had several people reach out to me about, what is it called? I think it's called Willy's Wonderland. Have you heard about this?
No. What did you say? Willy's Wonderland? That sounds like an X-rated film.
It's not. Here's the premise. When his car breaks down, a quiet loner, he always likes to play a quiet loner. A quiet loner agrees to clean an abandoned family fun center in exchange for repairs. So think like animatronic, like Showbiz Pizza, Chuck E. Cheese, you know, like the animatronic, like bears and that kind of thing. He soon finds himself waging war against possessed animatronic mascots while trapped inside Willy's Wonderland.
That sounds terrible.
It's supposed to be. It has 61% on Rotten Tomatoes. You care about Rotten Tomatoes. I don't, but this is 61%. That seems good, right? Isn't that high?
It's high for one of the films that we watch.
Yeah.
It's actually very high.
That's high, right? It says 85% like this movie. It came out this year? Yeah.
Oh, then it's got to be terrible.
Yeah. No, I think it was supposed to be in the movies. And then with COVID, it just went right to, because I actually went to watch it once, but it was full price. It was like $20. Like, you know how they did where the regular movies were $20. And I was like, well, I'll wait till it goes to like regular on demand.
All right, Anne. Well, listen, I think we are beyond my bedtime. So.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's 9:17 PM. Everyone.
It's dark out. That's all I'm saying. Dark out.
Chrissy needs her you know, nighttime routine to get in play.
I'll tell you, it's not easy anymore.
I used to have some warm milk. What are you gonna do?
No, I'll tell you, I don't even have any kind of beauty regime, but getting ready for bed takes like at least 20 minutes. I gotta brush my teeth, I gotta wash my face, it's a whole thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a whole operation. Yeah, I have like a 20-step routine.
It's and then I have to write in my diary.
Right. Yes. The diary.
The diary has to be written in.
How long do you allot time for the diary entry?
It could be 2 hours. It could be 10 minutes.
Two hours? You've sat and written in that diary for 2 hours in one night?
No, I don't write. It's like, you know, like I could be watching Love Island. So I watch, like I get distracted and then I write a sentence.
You'll be like, let me pull it out real quick and just jot down what I did today.
It's like, I have to wait for the commercials. And then then it could take forever. But if I actually just sit there without any of the TV on or anything, it's like 10 minutes.
But is your diary, like, is it just tactical? Like, are you like, today, these are the things I did. This is who I saw, who I spoke to. Or are you also putting like your feelings and emotions in the diary?
Mostly tactical. But if I'm enraged.
Oh.
No. Well, if I do have strong feelings about something, I might elaborate with a sentence or two.
You could be like, Anne was so annoying today because she kept talking about Clifford and it's terrible.
Yeah. I will say one time several years ago, my husband read my diary, which was fine because like, it's not like it's really not a private diary. Like I could put it on the coffee table if someone really wants to read it.
Do you put it out though? Or do you put it in your own private drawer?
It's in a drawer, yeah.
Oh my, he should not be reading that.
Yeah, but he and then he wrote at the top of the page, this is not true. I was like, you can't do that.
Not only did he read it, he violated it by writing in it.
Yeah.
That's, no, can't do that.
Yeah. And I will say one time I did write something that was not true on purpose about one of our coworkers so that I could take a picture of it and send it to her. Because she was always like, what do you write about in your diary about me? So I wrote something and I sent it to her.
And then did you then amend the diary and say, P.S. diary, I wrote this just because of this practical joke?
No, I basically, I wrote, Teresa is obsessed with me. She worships the ground I walk on. And then I was like, I'm leaving that in there. That's going to stay.
Look, it's true. It could be true.
It probably is. We all know.
It could be true. We don't know.
All right, Anne, I think we should tell everyone to follow us on Instagram and Twitter.
Yep.
And tell your friends and get ready for the big 1-year anniversary episode.
That's right. The Muldoon Awards are coming up. Another great thing to do is to at least give us 5 stars.
Yeah.
I think I've given up on requesting people to actually write anything, but if you could just take 3 seconds to press 5 stars, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Yeah.
Your family members, your enemies, whoever.
Yeah.
Say, hey, you want to listen to a podcast that they don't quite know what it's about, but we think they kind of have a formula, but it's okay. And even it can like pass the time. We're the podcast for you.
Yeah. And listen, Anne, I'm going to dig up that description that you did because it was pure gold.
Yeah. And then we're going to have to just commit it to memory, really write it down. And that's going to take us to the top.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
I can feel it in my bones.
All right. I'm very excited about the whole thing.
Me too.
Until next time, Anne.
Until next time, Chrissy.
Sweet dreams.
Right. Good. Have fun writing. In your diary.